Today is Monday, November 27th, 2023. This is part four of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Dan Cockrum. Dan spells his last name C-O-C-K-R-U-M, and my name is Tom Martin. Good afternoon, Dan. How are you today?
I'm fine. Trying to stay warm down here in San Antonio.
Boy, it's cold here in Flagstaff, so,
I
know what you mean. Dan, may we have your permission to record this oral history over the telephone?
Yes, you do.
Thank you. Last time, wrapping up part three, you had introduced us to your assignment from the Western office there out of San Francisco, your assignment to go to Grand Canyon to work on the Trans Canyon Pipeline, and you had mentioned working with W. M. Waldo Wilcox, and so I wanted to have you carry on with that, but something you mentioned after we talked the other day was like the perfect lead into this interview. How did you go to work, and how did you come home, and what kind of schedule did you work on that pipeline?
We worked a 5-day work week along with the contractor. At the beginning, we would ride mules in Friday morning, spend the week there up and down the job, depending on where the job was, Adam Ranch area or up further north. And then at the end of the work week, we would ride the mules out. It was my boss was pretty concerned about that because the contractor had helicopters, and what it amounted to was our 8 hours in and out. That was a whole day, work week, that we missed the work week. So finally.
So you guys spending 4 hours to mule in and 4 hours to mule out?
It was three and five.
Three and then
five to come out.
Okay.
From Banner Ranch.
That's a whole day's of lost work right there. And the helicopter would get you out in what, 10, 15 minutes?
Oh, yeah. Depending on if the contract, pilot can find the right updraft, yeah, it's real quick. But you got to remember, where there's an updraft, there's a downdraft. So.
Yes. Were you accustomed to riding large animals on narrow trails? Was that something that was you were comfortable with?
Oh, I've been bareback burros and friends, horses, but I've never been on anything like that. I mean, I had a mule. Her name was Helen, and she had U.S. Army tattoos on her. She'd been surplus to the Park Service from the Army.
Okay.
And she was big. She was a big Missouri mule. Wasn't some little Spanish Mexican mule. She was big because I weighed around 200 pounds at the time.
Okay.
And those mules on those trails are smarter than the horses are. They're a lot safer to ride.
Yeah.
And so we got along fine. One time I tightened her girth too tight. She laid down on the trail. I made me get off and loosen her girth. So.
Okay. Were you loading your own saddle? Were you doing your own tack, or was?
Oh yeah,
really? How did you learn how to do that?
Well, I learned from my boss.
From Waldo.
The mule named Comanche, and Comanche was a more spirited animal than mine was. So yeah, I'd never really done that. Yeah, I'd never saddled an animal, but I learned from that. I did it there. I don't know, it must have been nearly a month or more before we finally convinced the powers that be that we were losing inspection time on the contractor. And they finally made an arrangement. I'm trying to remember how this evolved, but what turned out was one of the pilots that came in with Halverson Lentz, Wayne Learn was his name, came down from Washington. And he got a little concerned about how the operations were being run by Halverson. And in the meantime, he fell in friends with Bob Thurston. And Bob says, how about we partner and we'll start a helicopter business here to see flights. And so I don't know how the power, I guess maybe they tried to keep us away from having to pay the contractor for helicopters. So we made a deal with Wayne and Bob Thurston. We rented their helicopters to fly us in and out. They brought in two brand new Hillard helicopters. They weren't the Bells, they were Hillard. Different arrangement than the Bells.
Yeah. Okay, so let's back up for a minute. Can you please tell me everything you remember about Wayne Learn?
Sure. He was a bush pilot. His background was he flew fresh produce into Alaska
from
Seattle. Yeah, and he had certification for fixed wing helicopters, and he also had, enough certification. He would rebuild airplanes and helicopters if they got damaged, if they were, if they could be recovered. He had enough skill and authority certification that he could rebuild a helicopter. And that's another thing he did on the side when he wasn't flying. He'd go up he told one story about going into Canada and getting a Beechcraft Bonanza that had made a crash landing, but it was salvageable. He had it on the trailer coming back across the border, and the Mounties or whoever it was checking stuff at the border for Canada wanted to know where his pilot's license was. He had that airplane. I didn't have the pilot's license. I didn't need it. Driving a truck, you know, with a trailer. But anyway, that was one of his stories he'd tell about. But he was a very, very cautious, very conscientious, careful pilot. We really were confident in him. And he was, you know, those pilots for the helicopter, not that they weren't, but the contractor, not that they weren't careful and whatnot, but they were in a lot of pressure. You know, they had schedules to meet and that kind of stuff. So Wayne wasn't under that kind of pressure. And so we got a regular tourist flight down to Phantom Ranch or Indian Garden or Garden Creek, or we had a heliport above Roaring Springs where we could fly in there.
So
Cottonwood Campground.
So hang on, let me make sure I understand this. It sounds like Wayne knew Elling Halverson, and the two of them got together to set up a commercial flying operation.
No, it was Wayne and Bob Thurston.
Oh, Wayne and Bob Thurston. I'm sorry. Thank you for that clarification.
Well, yeah, they had their heliport right across the street from the Red Feather, right across the highway.
Okay.
And he had two helicopters. No, as I say, he wasn't too happy with some of the, I'm not going to put Halverson down, but he didn't agree with some of the operations they were doing. So he fell in with Bob Thurston, and Thurston said, well, I'll back you up. Let's just be partners on this.
Isn't that interesting that they were using Hillers? Now, the Hillers had a nickname called the Hiller Killer, but by... You know, that was in the late 40s, early 50s, and now we're 15 years later, 1965. What were the Hillers like to fly in?
They were more, I don't know about how they compared as far as power and whatnot, but they were more comfortable to ride in than the pilot was in front, and you sit three behind them.
Oh, wow.
You could hold four people in the Hiller.
Okay, so it must have had a bigger engine than the two-seater Bell.
Yeah, and it was all enclosed. The thing about those Bells, and I'm not sure where the Hiller's gas tanks were, fuel tanks, but those Bells, the fuel tanks are above the engine, above the manifold of the engine.
Ooh.
Yeah, and that's the first thing. You hit the ground hard enough, those tanks rupture and everything lights up.
Yeah, and I'm not I'm bad on this history, this helicopter history, because I thought that Elling Halvorsen had said that he had started the scenic tours in Grand Canyon, and what you're saying is that Bob Thurston and Wayne Lern did that.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, they started tourist flights. Halvorsen didn't have any tourist flights going on at that time.
Okay.
I don't know how I left, and I don't know what happened between Wayne and I know Wayne ended up owning some of that trailer park that's north of where Babbitt's store is.
No kidding.
He owned several pieces of whatever arrangement he made at the end of their partnership with Bob, and Bob Wayne went over to Kingman and became the fixed base operator for the airport over at Kingman. But he still owned property there. I think he still owned it in the 1980s when I was working at Grand Canyon, but I never saw him again.
Hmm. Okay. I got a chance to do a helicopter flight into Stanton's cave with him in the 70s, and he was just calm, cool, collected, and really good with that flying machine. But this was 10 years before that when you were introduced to him. Very cool.
Before or after?
You were 10 years before. Yeah.
I was.
You were, yes, in 65.
We hired him when I was at Glen Canyon. We hired him to come in and do some, we had to get a survey crew in to do some work at the Rainbow Bridge, and Wayne flew over from Kingman. That's the last time I saw Wayne.
Okay.
In the early 1970s.
And he was flying llamas, wasn't he? Some sort of a llama helicopter for high altitude kind of flying.
It might have been. I don't remember.
Okay.
For sure. All I remember sure were the Hillers when he had them. He had two of them, a white one and a blue one there at Grand Canyon.
Okay.
Flying out of Tucson, downtown Tucson.
Right, which stayed on doing that for a long time. Huh. All right.
Yeah. Well, he was everything. He was everything you described him.
Would you, now having done both helicopter in and mule in, what was your transportation mode of choice?
Well, I didn't. I guess the mule was fun to ride and whatnot, but in cold weather and whatnot, I remember one time I got caught. It had to be still in winter time. Must have been in the winter time in 65. Riding out of the canyon, I started out, I just had my short sleeve shirt on and a little windbreaker, and it started raining on us after we got out of the inner canyon, and then started up the switchbacks Yaki Point, I guess, is where the mule corral was.
Yep.
Anyway, the rain turned to snow, and the snowflakes were blowing up my pants leg.
Oh my gosh.
It was the most miserable mule ride I ever had. Of course, the helicopters weren't flying at all. If we'd been depending on the helicopters, we'd have to stay at Phantom Ranch over the weekend. But we got out, but I could barely untie the ties on my saddlebags on that saddle. My hands was just, I didn't have gloves on, and it was a miserable experience, I can tell you that.
I bet. That's just...
I went home, got in a hot, warm tub of hot water, and had me a old Southern Comfort cocktail with a little warm water in it, and warmed myself back up.
Wow, I bet. Very cold. So at Phantom, is that where you stayed for the nights? Was it Phantom Ranch, or did you stay at a Spike Camp up above the box, or did you stay at Cottonwood or Roaring Springs or all of the above?
I was at all of the above. We primarily worked out of Phantom, but it was work that we had to be closer to the work. We'd stay at Cottonwood Camp. Never stayed at Roaring Springs. Of course, that was I don't remember what the Park Service quarters were there at Rolling Springs. The big residence that was there was for the Utah Parks Company family that took care of the pump house. Now they're in the power plant, I mean.
Okay.
And also, I spent some time at Havasupai Gardens building. I was inspector for the new pump house and the new pumps that went in up there. And that was about it. That's the only Cottonwood, Phantom, and Havasupai.
Okay. And were you packing in your own food, or did you rely on the Phantom Ranch canteen for meals?
We for breakfast and dinner, we had Phantom Ranch. We ate with the staff in the back room, back behind the kitchen.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, except for one time when they were making, or for one period of time, they had part of the staff crew for Bridie, the movie.
Okay.
They were down there, so we got to eat, for some reason, we got to eat out there, out with them, in the guest dining room at Phantom. But most of the time we was eating in the staff area back in the kitchen.
Who do you remember?
It was family style.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Yeah. Who do you remember was working there at that time?
I can't remember their names. It was a couple. They were in their 50s, maybe late 50s, early 60s, a man and his woman, a man and his wife, and they had a fellow that was a dishwasher, whatever, isn't it? In the kitchen, and he was a little strange. One time we complained about trying to get radio signals down the canyon. He said, "Oh, I put this tinfoil over my head, and I get all sorts of signals."
Oh my!
I think he had this. What I'm trying to say, about a 6 or 7 year old.
Okay. Well, yeah. They had a good sense of humor, anyway.
Oh, yeah. But I don't remember having, that was back then, that sounds like not very many people, but I don't remember, I just remember the man and his wife and this dishwasher.
Okay.
And that was the staff. And then, we talked about that, about the gauger, didn't we?
Right.
Molly. They were the other part of the population in, down at the ranch, and then the Crail crew was doing any work in the vicinity. They'd be in the residence there near the corrals, the Park Service corral.
Yep.
And that was about the permanent population of that area at Phantom.
Do you remember any of the Park Service, either rangers, law enforcement rangers, or interpretive rangers, or back then they might have been both, who were stationed at Phantom?
No, they really didn't have, as I recall, there wasn't a full-time person down there.
Okay.
Because we had closed the trail all the way from Phantom Ranch to Rolling Springs.
Ah.
And they would send somebody down, I think, if they knew river runners were going to be hitting Phantom at a certain time, they'd send somebody down for a short period. But I don't remember really any of the uniform staff being there on a 5-day basis.
Okay. And I'm assuming that in February and March, it would have been kind of quiet, but May, June, when it's getting hot, it would have been a little more crowded down there.
Yeah.
But you're right, with the work going on for the pipeline, North Kaibab would have been closed, but was the Bright Angel open? There's, you know, that line, what, came up to Plateau Point and then over to what is today Havasupai Gardens, and then and then with pumps moved it up from there, and then the piping from the pump system to the rim. Now there's that big angle borehole, but that was put in much later, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was there. We did that while I was there, chief of maintenance.
In the 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in the 60s, 65, where was that pipe going to run from the gardens up to the rim?
It was an existing pipe. We didn't
up the trail.
Was
the pump existing? Wait a minute.
Yeah, the old pump house there was still there. They took out one pump, put in two brand new pumps in a new pump house, but there was still one pump, I believe, in the old pump house.
Okay.
Still there for backup.
And that pumping system was taking water from Havasupai Gardens, from the spring there, a much smaller spring.
Exactly.
And collecting that water and then pumping it up. So that infrastructure was already in place. Got it.
Yeah. I can't remember. I think that it was, I'm not sure that was even a six-inch diameter pipe, that old existing steel pipe that was pretty well exposed all the way up. It was, I don't think it was any hardly buried at all.
Okay.
All the way up the south rim.
And well, I'd be careful here, because that in the gravity feed system where the water goes in the funnel at Roaring Springs and comes boiling out of the pipe there at Havasupai Gardens, down at the Silver Bridge, that pipe's under a lot of pressure.
Yeah, and you know, I got to thinking, I believe we did have chlorine there at the new pump house or new facility there at Roaring Springs. That line, I believe, was because it was tapped at Cottonwood Camp. It had to have chlorine in it.
Okay.
And I know there was no chlorination there specifically for Cottonwood, so it had to be. What got me a little confused here, Tom, is when I went back in 84, there was definitely chlorine at the pump house. The North Rim pump house also had a chlorinator that took care of the water line.
Okay.
For the whole length of the water line.
Okay.
But I cannot, it's fuzzy, since I wasn't there when the job was completed after the flood, I don't know what they had, how they were handling that before they rebuilt the pump house to the North Rim.
Okay.
The during that flood in 66, that power plant was basically. Did you get that email photograph I sent you of the wrecked pump house?
Yes, I did, with the little Pelton wheel. Yes, thank you.
Yeah. Anyway, that one was scrapped, and I understand when I got back there, I asked what they did with it. Was buried somewhere down there in the canyon.
Okay. Okay.
That's what I was told. I don't know what it is. But anyway, but the North Rim pump house, it only got minor damage. It got flooded and minor damage. So when they reestablished that pump house, they may have tied in the chlorine to that pump, to the Trans-Canyon water line in that job.
Okay.
Because when I went down, and the new pump house, Roaring Springs, that pumped the water up to North Rim, it chlorinated pipeline.
Okay, right.
Does that make any sense?
Yes. I can't remember who I was talking with about oral history, but they actually remembered cylinders of chlorine, or chlorine gas, maybe? I forget.
Yeah.
And they would have to, you know, they'd fly these cylinders in, and then they would have to hooked them up, and there was a small little catwalk, which wasn't a lot of fun to walk on with these cylinders, to get them kind of hooked up for the chlorinator. And I knew nothing
exactly
about that, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another thing, the pressures on that in that water line, I didn't see it happen, but a friend of mine was down there doing, I don't know what they were doing. He was with the service center on a contract to do something to that water, like a pinhole leak in a pipe. It bored a hole in the wall of the pump house.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, pressure was so high at that point.
Yep.
But anyway, yeah, you had to be careful down there where what you were doing with that chlorine gas.
Yep. Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay, so you're staying at Phantom. You were muling in and out for about a month and then worked a deal with Wayne and Bob Thurston and Wayne Learn to fly you in. Now, back in 65, the scenic tour regulations were non-existent. So were those guys kind of flying wherever they wanted? Did they have do you know anything about what kind of flights they were offering for scenery?
No, I don't. I know when I was dating a lady that became my wife, Wayne gave us a tour. He gave her a tour. It was not new to me, the scenery I saw, but he flew the length of the pipeline all the way up to Roaring Springs.
Oh, wow.
And, so I don't know how, what they're, I know they had to probably be careful about tangling with the power line, with the contractor's helicopters.
Right.
So there must have been some limits of where he could go. But one of Wayne's favorite stories about the flying. Have you ever been in a helicopter over the canyon?
I have, but not below the rim.
Well, it's not so much below the rim, but when you get off that helicopter, you're getting a helicopter and you're flying along about 50, 60 feet above the ground, and then you come to the edge of the canyon. You know what I'm talking about?
You betcha.
Well, one of Wayne's favorite stories, there was a couple of ladies, I don't know, widow ladies, but they were traveling together in the late 50s, early 60s, and they're in his hiller behind him, and he was flying along, and he flew over that rim, and they were like, whoa, I haven't had so much, reminds me of a honeymoon night. I hadn't been so thrilled. Yeah, I guess this is what they said. The night of my honeymoon.
Oh, my gosh.
That was their reaction to that. Because that's really, I tell you, a helicopter, Wayne, if he had another young pilot flying, since he had two helicopters, he had another young. But if you look like you had any kind of a hangover, they'd give you a good ride going over that helicopter, going over that rim.
Oh my gosh!
On Monday morning, going back to work.
Huh? Yeah. Yeah. Oh boy.
Get a thrill out of that.
Oh boy! Kick over the edge and drop. Yeah.
Oh yeah! All of a sudden, the bottom just falls out below you. Whoa!
Huh?
Yeah. And then another, well, I mentioned too, one of the things they do, and Wayne did it too, but all of them would look for economy of fuel, I guess, part of it, and part of it is time, was try to get your helicopter into an updraft.
Okay, to come out.
I mean, sometimes you'd think you was in an elevator.
Wow.
Really, but there was also, it didn't happen to me, but a guy we had, for an inspector, Zimmerman, O.K. Zimmerman, he, on one of the flights he was taken out, they got into a downdraft, and they darn near hit the ground.
Whoa.
Pancaked into the ground. The ground effect, I guess, was enough, had enough power that the helicopter just came within you know, 50 feet of hitting the ground because it was in a downdraft. And fortunately, I never experienced one of those.
Wow. Okay. Huh. All right, you mentioned working with Waldo in the Roaring Springs Cave, and you mentioned putting in some tie points, but I don't think that's the word, I have that right, where you're surveying, and you want to put in kind of survey points that are up and out of the way, but that those points can be used to measure into where things are supposed to be down on the actual work site.
Reference points.
Thank you. That's it.
Yeah.
What other things were you doing there in 65 on that job?
Well, we're trying to stay ahead of the contractor, making sure he had all the points and reference points, so you make sure he stayed in the trail. You know, he only had a 3 foot wide right of way.
Okay.
He's supposed to stay inside.
So that 3 foot wide right of way includes like piling his spoils.
That was basically to disturb. Well, I guess he's piling soil. No, he could pile some stuff, but he's going to have to restore it back to what it looked like.
Okay.
Yeah. But, I know I mentioned that in Old Pioneer, but we were setting up those offset points above Cottonwood, and underneath a rocky, there's a big boulder that was kind of sheltered, found a deteriorating case of dynamite.
Okay.
And the park didn't have any record of it. And it was, nobody really knew what to do about it. And my boss, Waldo, called, it was old enough to, this was wooden, it was a wooden box of dynamite.
Mm-hmm.
With the cases, and the pack rats had been into it and scattered a little bit of it out of there. Anyway, it was Atlas Powder Company or whatever, it was still legible on the case.
Okay.
Waldo called them and asked them what we could do to get rid of that, safely get rid of that. And they said, well, the best way to do it is to dig a very shallow trench and put kindling in it, and then take each individual stick of dynamite out and lay it in the trench and set the whole thing afire, and it'll burn just like gasoline or fuel.
Okay.
So we said, okay. And actually, we took a 5-gallon gas can down there, poured over the whole thing with a 50-foot fuse, and lit it, and it just burned perfectly. We didn't have to handle any of that, because I don't know if you're familiar with deteriorating dynamite, but it can sweat TNT, basically.
Right, it'll sweat nitroglycerin. It'll give you quite the headache, but...
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we didn't want to fool with any of that. We just doused everything with gasoline.
Yeah, just burning it.
And went back and took shelter near, but it was far enough away from the house that was going to damage the place. So that was the way we got rid of it.
Nice.
But we found that when we were doing offsets along the power line. Lord only knows how long that dynamite had been down there.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Okay, so you got the surveys in before the work, before Halverson's crews came in to actually do the digging and the laying of their pipe.
Yeah. And we also, while we were at it, we put in permanent benchmarks.
Okay.
For future use, you know.
Yep.
So you don't have to go in there and resurvey the whole. They're basically abandoning a lot of that line with what they're proposing to do down there now.
Yeah, I think they're gonna pump take the water right there, out of the Bright Angel Creek, right where it meets the river, isn't it? And pump that from there.
Yeah.
And that'll abandon the whole system all the way up to Roaring Springs.
Well, they're still gonna have to get water to Cottonwood.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
And the thing that I wonder about it, I don't know out there. I'm sure they're going to have some sort of cistern along the bank of Bright Angel. But Bright Angel, when it has runoff, you don't pump that water, you know.
Right. It's too turbid. There's too much fines in it.
Even the water on runoff, the water out of Roaring Springs get murky.
That tannin, in the spring.
Yeah, it's because there's the dust. That's type of limestone or whatever the stone is in there.
Yep.
It gets this dust on it, and then when the water is runoff coming in there in the spring, the water level raises up and it gets that silt. What I'm trying.
Oh, interesting.
To say.
Yep.
And we've had to deal with that ever, but that was we never had to shut the system down because of it, but we had to deal with it.
Okay.
But when you're dealing with water running down an open stream bed out there, and you hear boulders bouncing down, you know, I don't know how they're going to work that out. We looked at that when I was still there as park engineer, and everybody was concerned about what it's going to do to the Phantom Ranch area.
Right, and then they would have to pump it from Phantom up to the gardens, and then we got the pump there at the gardens already to pump it up to the rim.
Exactly, and see, when we built the Trent County water line, we put in a 15 kVA power line down to Phantom Ranch.
So you did that in 65?
Yeah, but I don't know what they're going to need. Are they going to have to, you know, put in a heavier power line to take care of that down there? I don't know.
And the power line that I'm aware of is a big three-phase line that comes in off by the Orphan Mine, drops in that way, and then goes underground and is all underground once it gets down on the Tonto out to Plateau Point, I think, and then down to Phantom. Is that right?
Well, all I know about it, I can't remember where it came down. All I remember seeing it was the buried from Havasupai Gardens to Plateau Point.
Okay.
But I don't recall how it was handled. I didn't get involved with that. I think Waldo or one of the other inspectors. Well, let me back up. That power line, we had APS had an inspector there.
Okay.
So that's why I didn't get involved. He was involved with all that.
Okay, that makes sense.
He was on the whole. He was on the job the whole time on the power line part.
Okay.
And I can't remember his name now, but he was there for a good. Well, until that power was acceptable, he was there after the flood because it hadn't been accepted before the flood. So anyway, that's another thing. That did away with the old single-engine generator at Phantom Ranch.
Oh, tell me about that.
Yeah, I don't. It was across the trail at Phantom Ranch, down across from where the swimming pool was.
Okay.
And the recreation building that was there.
Okay.
It was over there by near the. Shower and public or not community bathrooms and showers that were, and it was I'm trying to remember the name of the company, but it was one of those single cylinder whoop poop poop poop. You'd hear it when it was running.
Yep. Okay.
And so every once in a while we had to go down and start it up, something caused it to stop, and I remember going in there with Waldo and turning that big flywheel
to get it
going.
You bet.
And you know, the fuel for that was hauled down before helicopters, hauled down there on mules.
Okay. And I'm assuming that it was run at night for lights.
Yeah.
Might have been running to run the washing machines, maybe.
Yeah. There was no air conditioners to run. Didn't
right.
have to worry about that.
Okay.
And I don't know. I don't know if it ran 24 hours a day or not. You'd have to keep your refrigerator, but the refrigerator wouldn't have to be 24 hours.
Unless the fridges were running on propane or something.
Yeah.
But I don't
but
know.
Anyway, that power line took care of that. But I'm not sure that it was designed to take whatever they're planning on putting down there at Phantom Ranch to pump that water up. I don't know if that current wiring is will handle whatever capacity they need to run pumps from.
Right. That's right. I don't know that, but that's a really good question. I would assume that they would have to increase the power, the capacity of that
load. Yeah, to handle the load. Yeah, because right now you got gravity bringing the water up to have Super High Gardens.
Right.
But down there, you're not going to have that. You're going to have those pumps at Indian Garden are like 600 or 650 horsepower, or have a Super High Garden. And look how much more elevation you're going to have to push that water up from Indian Garden, from Phantom Ranch. So I don't know. By the way, that whole project, it was handled differently in the design. They had, the National Park Service had, what is the outfit? It's a federal, what is the federal health?
Oh, the Department of Health.
Well, not department, it's the Navy. It's a branch of the Navy, but it's, handles health for DIA. Oh.
Right. Isn't it the U.S. Public Health Department?
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
I understand it was some engineers from the health department, from that budget, designed this new setup for pumping water up to the South Rim.
Okay.
There was not. Now, they might have been supervising consultants. I don't know. I just don't know about that. But I know that from contacts I've had with folks that are still in contact with the service center out there, that it wasn't the design for this new setup was not totally under the auspice, responsibility of the engineers in that design office.
Okay.
They brought in some people from the Public Health Service, engineers, and then they may have put it out to bid and got consultants, but they were at the top responsibility was the Public Health Service, not the National Park Service.
Okay. So when you guys were working on this in 65, was the San Francisco office responsible for designing all this?
It was. A fellow named Ralph Stratton was the head of the team, civil engineer. He was the team manager for the team that designed it.
What do you remember about Ralph?
Oh, he's a pleasant fellow. I didn't have a lot of contact with him. I'd see him in the office all the time when I was in there. But
okay,
came in after the flood and was doing a survey of the damage, and a part of the trail gave way with him and put him in the hospital.
Oh, wow.
Really seriously messed up his back.
Oh, my gosh.
So, I remember that part, but as I say, I never worked elbow to elbow with him.
Okay.
But he had a good staff. I mean, I think what they did with what they had to work with and the materials, I think they did a good job.
Yeah. Here we are
I mean, it lasted 50 years.
Exactly, exactly. With a lot of maintenance work along the way, totally understood. But there you go.
Yeah, more than 50. I mean, that was the limit to what they didn't expect to last longer than 50 years.
Right.
But the good old Park Service and keeping funding going and whatnot couldn't keep up with it. Get it replaced before it started really becoming a problem.
Yeah. So there was a lot of helicopter work flying back and forth to bring in fuel and crushers and diggers and jackhammers and compressors and all kinds of stuff in little bitty parts, and then putting that stuff together to make it work down there. Concrete.
Yeah, and there was another element is we had a contract with a company that x-rayed welds, with x-ray over welding.
Oh.
Weld on that pipeline. And the guy, his first name was Guy, but I can't remember his last name. He had a little expanded, it looked like a little outhouse with a generator and a little air conditioner that had to be moved along the pipeline, because this is before digital imaging.
Okay.
He had to take photographs, take x-rays, and at the end of the day, he would develop them and check them for any kind of problems, see if there was any cracks. Every one of those welds was x-rayed.
Wow.
Of that pipeline.
Do you have any idea how he would do that? How's that done?
Well, he had a camera, the x-ray set up that he could clamp on that pipe, whatever, however it was welded. And I never did see him doing it. I mean, those welders were certified welders that most of them, I think, had backgrounds in refinery work.
Okay.
We got high pressure, and they had their own little hallmarks. When they did a weld, they would tap that hallmark on there, so you could tell who did it.
Oh wow!
And it was pretty complicated. But that what I was getting around to, you talk about the things how long by the helicopter. That little dark room that he had, that was an item that the contractor had to move along with his equipment, with his construction equipment. You see, those certified welders, they had a crew, pipe fitter crew, labor type guys. You'd have a certified letter and maybe two or three of these. It looked like a Punjab from over. These guys would show up with an umbrella for the guy to sit, the welder to have an umbrella over him, sit protected from the sun and whatnot.
Wow.
And he had these three servants that would be doing all the hard work, measuring, bending the pipe, and shaping it up to put it together where he could weld it.
But wow.
It was kind of funny to watch it. umbrella go up, the boiler to get out of there and sit there and wait for the guys to get the stuff all lined out for him to perform.
his next little weld, and then he'd wait for them to get the next pipe in and... Huh.
Yeah,
and then they must have been worried about water hammering, and so did they have concrete dead men scattered all up and down this thing?
It depended on the alignment of the pipe.
Okay,
you know, if it looked like it was going to be a problem, yeah. Then there was vents along where you could let out air on the if you had to shut the water line down, and the water, some of it would flow away from the high points.
Right.
Well, the high points had these vent things, so you'd open up, and when you turn the water back on, you'd blow all that air out.
Were those automatic, or did you? They have to manually do that?
They were manual.
Wow, okay.
You had to be real careful of that.
How so?
Turning that water line on.
How so?
Well, the pressure turning that on. I mean, people have been known to launch fire hydrants because they open them up too quickly.
Got it. For water hammering, where the water just moves with a force.
Exactly.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, I was talking about those pipe fitters. maybe four or five that were Basque people.
Huh.
They came out of Flagstaff, and the family, I got to know some of them. One of them had a restaurant there near the college. I don't remember his name or anything, but I remember going to the restaurant one time.
Okay.
They were fun to be around and watch them, listen to them.
Huh.
When they at work. You know, that kind of being down there in that canyon would be kind of rough on you, but they were out there in that sun every day, out on the pipe.
So the only restaurant that I think of near the university was El Charro.
Well, is that still in there?
No, not anymore, but it was in the day.
Oh, yeah. I had many a meal at El Charro. I think I ate my first jalapeno there when on one of my family trips to California. We went on Route 66.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah, that's I'm sorry to hear it's not there anymore.
Yeah, me too. It was a good restaurant back in the day. So the welders were from a Basque family out of Flagstaff.
Yeah.
Huh, how neat is that?
Yeah.
Okay. Helicopters. Talk to me about some of the not-so-friendly helicopter flights, because that was actually fatal for some of the crew there coming in and out.
Yeah, it happened in April, I think it was, 66, before the flood. Helicopter pilot, name was Jack, I can't remember the last name, but he was a veteran of World War II. He'd flown Corsair. He was a Marine pilot.
Okay.
Flying Corsairs in the Pacific. And he was loading up there at the camp, and two Navajo laborers got in. It was a Bell, one of those Bell, like in that opening of MASH, that type of Bell helicopter.
Right.
Was being used the primary down there. And the two Navajos were strapped in with one safety belt, and the helicopter pilot was one. And he, just after he got off and started climbing, his tail rotor went out, and he didn't have enough time or forward speed to try to get it to the ground. You can do that if you're up high enough. A helicopter loses its rotor, you can auto gyrate
right
to the ground. But he was at full power when it went out, so he went down and slammed hard enough that the seat belts of the Navajos broke. And they both went out through the bubble of the canopy, but Jack's didn't break, and he didn't have a chest strap. He just had and so he went over, and his head hit the control panel, did serious damage to it. It happened close enough to the camp that the crews ran over there before the thing caught fire. As I said, gas tanks ruptured, and it caught fire, but they got him out of the helicopter. But he didn't live to be flown out of the canyon.
Mm.
He died on the spot. And the two Navajos, they severed broken bones. They were in the hospital quite a time, but they both survived the crash. That
Good.
Was the only fatality down in the canyon while I was there.
Okay.
Now, one of the pilots that the contractor had, a young fella, he had married a lady that had a 3 or 4 year old child, and they've had an opportunity. They had to take those helicopters after so many hours. Wayne Lerner had to do it too. They have to take the helicopters down to Phoenix and get it certified, have them checked out, you know, so many hours, whatnot.
Okay.
And this helicopter pilot to take his family down there, the wife and the 3-year-old. He got down there to Phoenix, and he landed the helicopter. She got out. He got out. The child got out. He picked the child up and put him on his shoulder.
Oh, no.
And a gust of wind blew in or something, and that helicopter blade came around, and that was, it was terrible. He never came back to the canyon. I don't know what happened to him after that. But that was an off-site fatality that was associated with the pipeline.
Oh, my
and
gosh.
And I think they've had, after I left, I think they had at least three more fatalities involving helicopters.
Right. I know there was one about a fuel. They lifted off some fuel and headed to the rim to bail over the edge, and the fuel tank hit the rim, the sling load, basically.
Uh-huh.
But I'm not sure about that. I was not there, and I do not know.
There was one that I understood killed two people, the helicopter pilot and his brother who worked on the ground.
Okay.
That might be the one. I don't know. But there was a couple of other incidents with helicopter. One helicopter landed upside down in Bright Angel Creek, and the pilot crawled out of it, no problem, and he stayed around. He wasn't shook up enough that he left. I can't remember his name. And then there was another pilot that was a retired Navy. In fact, I guess he flew one of the first helicopters in the U.S. Navy. He was a World War II vet. He was a junk. He would collect the wire after he did some blasting down there. He'd get out of the helicopter and go get the wire and take it up the rim and then burn the insulation off of it and sell it. He did it one time, and the helicopter was, he had it idling when he got out to go get, and the helicopter tilted over somehow.
Oh, no.
Not on good ground. Yeah. While he was junk collecting. But that's the only two other instances I remember that actually happened. I have a picture somewhere of that helicopter that ended up upside down, and I have pictures of the one that crashed. The park safety officer and I went down there to take pictures and measurements and whatnot for the park's report.
Okay.
Of the crash. And I got there after all the gore had been taken away. Nothing but the burned out helicopter left on the ground.
Okay.
And I cannot remember that safety officer's name, but it was a park ranger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. What else do you remember about that? Let's see. The other thing I wanted to ask you about here, and let me look at our time here where we're at. I just want to capture a couple things. One was, you mentioned taking a helicopter flight with a young woman who would become your wife. What was her name?
Linda.
What was her maiden name?
Her maiden name?
Yeah.
Killip.
K-I-L-L-I-P. There's a school in Flagstaff named Killip.
Oh, really?
Killip Elementary.
She's from Yonkers, New York.
Okay, from New York. What was Linda doing out there in New York, and out there at the Grand Canyon, and how did you meet her?
Well, I like to say she picked me up in the bar, but that's not really the way it worked. I met her at the Bright Angel.
Okay.
At a dinner table. She and her friend, were both registered nurses.
Okay.
And they were on their way to California, and they stopped by to see the canyon, and they had to be in Bright Angel. They had a place over, staying in Maswick in one of those cabins, and I think it had it for two nights. Anyway, that's where we first met, was the Bright Angel, went in the bar there, and then we went to El Bar, and then we went to the Inn, and then we went out to see the local band that they had at Bob Thurston's place
out in Tucson. Okay.
Yeah, so that was her first experience in a cowboy bar.
Huh.
And that's how we met and spent some time there. Like I say, they had more than one night there. And I spent some time with them, and then they went on their way, and we kept in touch. Well, we had a 2-year courtship. I told her I was never going to go east of the Mississippi. If she wanted to put up with me, she'd have to stay in the west. And, it's a next story when I get. We, for what, nearly 2 years, we did long distance back and I never went to see her, but she came out to see me. And finally, she moved, when I was up at Page, she moved to Flagstaff and got a job at the hospital there.
Okay.
And that's when I proposed to her and we got married.
Nice.
And that was in 69.
Oh, very really. Fun. So then I can ask you another nursing-related question, which is about the Grand Canyon Clinic, which was, as you mentioned, we talked about this before we started this interview today, back in 65, it was a hospital. It was a new hospital with surgery unit and labor and delivery and overnight beds and the whole deal. Had the cafeteria there. What do you remember about that place?
Well, actually, it was under construction.
Okay.
They were still using the hospital, the old wooden one, where the, who's in there now, the foundation or whatever.
Yeah, the conservancy is over there.
Yeah, that was where Dr. DeVio and his staff of nurses, that's where they were working out of. The hospital, the clinic now, was under construction in 66, 67, I think it was.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right. Did you ever go into the hospital when it was in the wooden building across from the railroad tracks, opposite across the El Tovar?
Oh yeah.
What do you remember about that building?
Well, I remember Dr. Gavio.
Okay.
I had a survey crew. This is after the flood. It might have been in 67, maybe. I had a survey crew, and I didn't use my safety glasses when I was cutting some vegetation out of the way, a big old cedar stump, and I got some in my eye.
Okay.
And so I went in to see him, and he cleaned out my eye. And yeah, I was in there. I dated a couple of those, just before I met my wife. I dated some of those nurses that were working out of there.
Okay.
They're delivering babies in there.
Yeah. Yep. Back in the days when people were actually born there at the South Rim, you betcha.
And the staff lived in Park Service housing.
Okay.
Dr. Bio had a house right there by the. Trying to think, you know, where the ranger station, the old ranger station is. There's
yes.
A house between, going around that road, then you get to the where that I don't know what that building is now. When I was there in the 60s, the bank was there. At the end of that building where Fred Harvey had their bus, had the
garage. Oh, really? In what they call the general offices, the GO, there was
yeah.
a bank there, huh?
There was a bank there, yeah. At the road end, not at the end where the garage is, but
yep.
the other end. That's where the bank was.
Okay, huh?
And superintendent's house across the road there.
Yes.
At that time.
Yep.
And but Caballo's house was right there. Before you got to that building, where the bank was.
Right, between the well, it kind of roughly speaking, it would be the GO where the bank is. Then kind of up on the hill a little bit there would have been the hospital, today's conservancy offices. And then there's a couple private residents right there, and then Ranger Operations, which would have been the park headquarters.
Yeah, it was Gavio was staying in one of those houses between the
okay.
hospital and their operations building.
So easy walk, 24 hours a day. Okay.
And see, Babbitt's store was down there. What Polly burned, I guess, was the employees' lounge.
Yes.
They had an employees' bar there. But that was Babbitt's store was down there with the post office and the magistrate's office.
Which is still standing there.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. And if you're resident, Babbitt's store would give you green stamps.
Oh, really?
But if you were a tourist, you're out of luck, fella. Yeah. Yeah, that was... They had green stamps and Babbage.
Okay, and you were collecting those stamps and licking them and putting them in a book, and if you had enough books filled, you could actually get some free stuff.
Yeah.
Huh.
But anyway, that was a community center down there with a bank over there in that other building and the post office
I'm gonna go ahead in the timeline just a little bit, and then maybe we need to think about wrapping up this interview here. You married Linda, you mentioned, in 1969. Where'd you guys get married?
Yonkers, New York.
In New York?
Yep.
Wow, except you said you'd never live over there, but you were willing to get married over there.
Yep. We honeymooned to Puerto Rico and Virgin Islands.
So oh, wow.
That was a step in that direction.
Huh. Wow. Okay. Well, I'm wondering if right now is a good time to put a comma in this interview series. Is there anything you want to add about what we've covered here that I haven't asked you about?
Well, I think we've covered pretty well everything up to maybe the construction of the bridge. Well, all the bridges, in fact.
Okay, well, tell you what.
I don't know how much you want to go into over that.
I do. I want to go into a lot of that.
Okay.
So let's wrap this up. Hang on a second now. This will then go ahead and conclude part four of Grand Canyon Oral History Interview with Dan Cockrum. Today is Monday, November 27th, 2023. My name is Tom Martin, and Dan, thank you so very much.
Hey, you're very welcome.